okay? So I'm one of those odd scientist believers. And so I work very hard to try to make sense of all of this together. So I'm actually going to start with some definitions of emotions. Now, you're going to see some overlap between what Jen and I are talking about today. And I can't sit still, so I need to walk around a lot. And I'm sorry if your neck hurts. You can try to pin me down, but it's never going to work. So as more of a scientist, and you'll see. So, you know, Jen has a very calming presence, a very therapeutic tone, and my students will tell you that that is not me. So I'm like a quadruple shot of espresso, and I've got lots of energy, and it's why I don't do therapy, okay? So I am a behaviorist at heart, and so, you know, I need to have operational definitions of things. And so I've provided you with a few simple categories of emotions. And I loved that Jen brought in the picture of all of the emotions from the movie Inside Out. And we actually saw that movie together. And the first time we saw it, well, I went back and saw it the next day. And the first time we saw it, I sat there the whole time going, that's not how it works. I was angry. I missed the whole movie because I was just irritated. And there were some things that were right. There were some things that were good and were dead on. And there were other things I was like, that's not how it works. That's not what the science says. And I had to get over it, and we watched it again the next day because my son loved it. And I was like, all right, I can appreciate it. But in that movie, we get some basic categories, right? And so Jen gave us a very beautiful list of different gradations, different flavors of these basic emotions. So we call these the primary emotions. And we are largely born with the propensity for these, and they're very early arriving, okay? So things like fear, sadness, joy, contentment, I should put some contentment on here, disgust. Anybody who's ever tried to feed a baby something that they didn't want, that's disgust in all of its glory. And you know, the thing with emotions that's so important is that the more related something is to our sense of well-being, the more emotional we will be, all right? So case in point, how many of you guys heard about the bus accident? The kids who were going from Channel View High School Band, and they had been at Disney, and they were on their bus ride back to Texas, and they went off the embankment in their bus and had a horrible accident, okay? Now we see these things on the news all the time, right? And we go, oh, that's really terrible, how scary that is, and then we just kind of move on with our day. Prior to that day, okay, so actually the night of the accident, they left at midnight, okay, and they had their accident at about 5:30 in the morning. That day that they left, we were standing in line behind two of the kids from Channel View High School Band. And so seeing that on the news was very upsetting because we didn't know these kids deeply and intimately, but we knew them, right? These were living, breathing kidaronis to us, and they were super nice to my kidaroni, okay? We were in line for 2.5 hours, and these two boys kept my really unhappy 8.5-year-old kid entertained in line for a ride, right? So it tugged on us a little bit more, okay? So yeah, we've got these basic emotions, but then we have what are called the self-conscious emotions. And these things are a little later coming in. They require that we have a sense of self, right? That I'm a person and, you know, I don't just have my stuff going on in here, but there are other people out there who can make an assessment of what's going on in my stuff. And, you know, we start to develop these things like guilt and shame and embarrassment and jealousy and pride and empathy, right? So, you know, Jen gave us this whole piece about how she doesn't say negative emotions. I'm a scientist, I'm gonna say negative emotions, mostly because that's what the literature says, right? So Jen's really good and she can craft because she has to work with people. I just have to teach. So we're gonna call them negative emotions. They're not just, right? I work with people in a different way. Smack them around a little, right? And we use negative emotions. And that simply means that they're emotions that are less pleasant, right? And so Jen gave that a much nicer flavor than the scientist does. So one of the things I'd like you to do right now is to think about some ways that your children express any one of the emotions that are up here, any one of the emotions that Jen gave us, and think about how they elicit emotional responses out of you, okay? If you don't have children, just think about somebody who tends to get a rise out of you, right? I want you to hold on to that because we're gonna come back to that at the end, right? So again, Jen gave us some allusion here to emotional competence. And we have to talk about what competency with emotion is if we're gonna talk about regulating it, okay? So when we talk about emotional competency, it's really having an awareness of our own emotional states, having an awareness of the emotions of others, right? Having that vocabulary to express emotions or label emotions, and being able to have those empathetic, and you know, sympathy is not bad, right? So I love Brené Brown too. Sympathy is not a bad thing, right? We can't all have the same experience as everyone else. So even if we can't empathize, the ability to have sympathy to recognize, wow, that's really impacting you in this way. That's still a very important skill for us to have. Recognizing that our inner emotional states do not have to be the clothing that we put on the outside. That is emotional competency, okay? You've all been in the situation where someone has asked you, you doing okay? Right? Now, you have a couple choices, right? You can tell them the truth and say, nope, not even close. Right? You can try to play it off, yep, I'm good, I'm fine, right? That I'm good, I'm fine is covering up what might be going on inside. And some of us are better at it than others, right? Especially depending on who asks us. So if our spouse asks us, you okay? Yep. Everything's good, right? Yeah, not so much, right? So implementing coping skills to help reduce the intensity and duration of our emotions. And it's not to say that having intense or long-lasting emotions is bad, but eventually we do have to ride out that wave and we do have to cope with it because we can't live up here in our emotional intensity all the time. Our system isn't designed to handle that, okay? It is stressful. So we do have to get it back under control. And you know, the truth is that our emotional responses have really significant social implications. And remember, the more important it is to us, the more emotional we're going to be. So the closer those people are to us, the more important the impact of those emotional responses in our social interactions is going to be, okay? My child can sass me and it will send me down a road that I am not proud of, all right? A college student can sass me and I can just sit there and go, well, that's a shame because I'm the one holding your grade in my hands, right? So we have very different emotional responses, right? So here's the deal, is that we can coach our children emotionally, all right? But if we're gonna coach them, we have to have emotional competency ourselves, right? So, you know, it's one thing to try to teach somebody a skill, but if you don't have that skill yourself, good luck, right? So try to teach somebody cooking if you can't cook, okay? If you know how to cook, you know how to use a knife, right? And you know how to teach knife skills, that's great. You don't know how to teach knife skills, don't give them the knife, okay? And don't take the knife yourself. So we have the ability to foster emotional competency by helping children to monitor and label, right? So Jen gave us some really great stuff about monitoring and labeling emotions. And we need to be able to use emotional responding as opportunities for learning, okay? And it's actually not just negative emotions in terms of the adverse impact, right? Or the, you know, unpleasant emotions. Sometimes our sense of being overjoyed is also not appropriate in a moment, okay? So if somebody is devastated and just failed out of school, the last thing I wanna do is, woohoo, got a 99, right? Dang, if I could only got that one more point. Meanwhile, my poor friend is suffering here, right? So there's a piece that we have to consider that, you know, the situation determines how it is that we need to modulate emotional responses, right? We have to learn to teach coping skills. And if we struggle with our coping skills, we're gonna have a hard time teaching our children coping skills. And a lot of times they're not gonna wanna listen to us, particularly in the moment. We're gonna talk more about trying to deal with, you know, the little monsters in their moment. And we become little monsters in that moment as well, so we've gotta be mindful of that. But one of the things that we can do for them is model our own emotional coping, model our own emotional regulation, okay? And so we've really got to talk about naming and claiming. We have to figure out what our emotional regulation looks like. And we've got to recognize that emotional skills are going to vary by age, and that's really going to be mostly what I'm focusing on today, but also temperament, personality, experience, the context that we're in, okay? So we have to recognize that even if we have taught skills, there are going to be moments when they're going to fly out the window because there are other things assaulting our system at the moment. And the skills that we have in place, they're not screaming loud enough at us, all right? And then we've got to accept that emotional regulation lasts through adulthood, okay? So, and this is really the biggest piece because today we're going to have to grapple with the fact that we frequently expect too much from our kids, all right? So you're going to see the brain a couple times today. And Christina, is this a laser pointer? Oh, yes, my favorite thing. So as a short person, it's not even that it's up there. Even if it was down here, I would need the laser pointer. So this is a super boiled down version of the development of emotional regulation, all right? But let's just think about this here, right? And you know, how many of us have had exposure to infants and toddlers? Not our spouses, okay. Sorry, I had to throw that in there. My husband's not here, so I can do that for him, right? So we know that in the beginning, they're just trying to make it, right? They're just trying to get through. They're trying to grapple with the ability to self-soothe or who do I seek out to help me soothe. That's a part of our job, right? Is to help guide them through that. And they're really very young in the process. And we're going to see why in a second, okay? So, you know, our young children around 2 to 6 years of age, they're working to understand emotions, control emotions. Sometimes they're better at it than others. Sometimes we are too, right? By the time we hit middle childhood, we're looking at some improved memory and emotional regulation skill. They're actually trying to implement their own strategies. They may get it, they may not, but at least they're trying. And, you know, they're a little more level. So a lot of parents will describe the earliest years, those first 3 years, as being the most challenging, okay, and the most taxing. And then they start to become a little more human, but they're still little kids. By the time they hit middle childhood, this is where we start getting the, oh, they're so grown up, right? And they really seem so grown up. And then they become teenagers. And they think they're grown up, right? And, you know, it's almost like they work backwards, but they're not working backwards. We'll see through, as I take you through the brain, that it's not working backwards. It's actually it is a developmental advancement, but believe it or not. So we have, you know, this movement from middle childhood where things seem to be pretty smooth. It's not that everything's going to be perfect, but it seems to be pretty smooth. And then we get the teenage years. And in the teenage years, there's an area of the brain, that amygdala, okay? And the amygdala here, they look purple here. But these two little bodies right here, these tiny, tiny little things, are the things that are setting off those fireworks that Jen talked about earlier, okay? And in the adolescent years into early adulthood, the amygdala is going through some really, really rapid development. But this prefrontal cortex, this part right here, is the last part to develop, all right? And this is our thinking, our planning, our decision-making. This is the part of the brain, especially, now Jen had a really great one. I couldn't get an image that had all of the things simply. There's an area here that it's called the anterior cingulate cortex, or the ACC, and it provides connections between these lower brain areas and our thinking brain, right? And that part of the brain helps us to look at situations and take stock of our emotions and go, okay, so if I respond this way, this is something that could result from that. Maybe I want to back off and try a different path, right? That part is still cooking in the teens, all right? And so then we end up with these little beings that act first, apologize later, right? And we always try to teach them, you know, think first, then act. And that's fine when they're sitting in a class. If they're sitting in a health class or in a youth group, they can talk about and process situations. But when they're in an emotionally charged situation, those amygdala are firing like crazy. And this part is going, what? Oh, this is interesting over here, right? Meanwhile, the amygdala is going crazy, going to fire it up, right? So by the time we hit our young adult years, we have people making the assumption that we're grown-ups and that we can do this. But the problem is that this thinking part of the brain, that prefrontal cortex, is really not developed until our early 20s, possibly even 25. So if we start looking at teenage and young adult years as a very protracted period of development, we are often expecting way too much of the young people in our homes. And the truth of the matter is that one of the hallmarks of adult development is the successful merger of cognition and emotion, being able to have the two inform each other and play nicely with one another, okay? So the trick is then, you know, trying to figure out why is it that we expect too much of our kids in terms of their emotional competency and their cognitive control, right? And then we get frustrated and we end up emotional ourselves. And it's exhausting, right? It's exhausting. And I have found that there are very few people who are willing to go, yeah, I am dead tired and I got nothing left for my family at the end of the day, right? Because I am working and I am cooking and I am cleaning. Whether you work outside of the home or inside of the home, you are working. Whether you are man or woman, you are working. And these kids need so much out of us. Everybody, it seems, needs so much out of us, and it's exhausting. And you know, as a person who tried this parenting gig for a long time without focusing on my faith and without understanding how much guidance and support we have from God, that exhaustion was killing me, and it was killing my parenting, absolutely destroying my parenting. And so one of the benefits, and this is really in the last 2 years, I've started Bible reading, and it has been the most transformative experience for me. And I've learned a few, there are a lot of truths, and there's so much scripture that's relevant to our parenting, to our marriages, to our relationships with people, but I've just pulled a few of my favorites out for you. And, you know, if we're coming off of this topic of exhaustion, right, God calls us to power through that, right? He helps us to power through those trials. He beautifies us and perfects us in those moments when we just don't think we have enough, and we can go back to that well, right? And we can give him our burden, and he will help us through, right? And, you know, we can consider it all joy, right? That these trials are there for a reason. God also calls us to put the needs of our children first. And this is not the Pinterest needs. Okay? There are very few parents, grandparents, and caregivers who haven't had the experience of seeing something pop up on Facebook or other social media. I was on Pinterest for about 2 weeks, and I can't. It's overwhelming. There's too much stuff. The navigation is ridiculous. But more than anything else, it makes me feel incompetent. Like I'm not doing everything I can for my child. And I'm lucky. I've only got one. Right? Now, he's got a little bit of care. He's got a lot of food allergies and health issues, but it makes you feel incompetent. And it forces you to focus on things that are not as important, okay? Their needs, their top needs, their emotional, their spiritual development, that's the stuff that we need to focus on, right? And so, you know, if we put the needs of others ahead of ours, not their lunch, their food, and yes, those are important, right? You know, people get, you know, child protective services called on them when they don't provide those things. But, you know, we have other things that we need to focus on, right? And if we do it with a thankful heart and we don't complain, we will muddle through it less and we will thrive through it more, right? God also calls us to be patient with our children as he is with us, and he has unending patience. We don't. We are human and imperfect. But the truth is that being made in his image means that we need to try our best to be as patient as possible and gentle and kind and loving. And Galatians 5:22, this is one of my favorite things, and I will come back to this over and over and over again, right? Because the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, right? I love that one. Kindness, goodness, faith, gentleness, and self-control, right? These are two pieces of emotional regulation in us. And I have found that being prayerful and spending time with God has allowed me to deal better with all of these issues, right? God has also called us to choose our words carefully. There is nothing more stinging than a rebuke from a parent that is unwarranted, that is over the top. And you know what? In our exhaustion, It's easy to do. And one little word, one change in a word can make a huge difference for a child. And you know, this piece, whoop, wrong one, go back. This piece right here, don't answer a fool according to his foolishness, lest a fool you be, right? Do not engage with the enemy. In that moment, they are acting like little terrorists. And my tagline at home is, I do not negotiate with terrorists. When you are a human being again, we will talk, right? God did not give you a body to throw yourself on the floor and to flop around. And yes, still at 8, he never did this as a child. He watched his cousin do it once. He goes, why is he doing that? I was like, because he's being stupid. He goes, he looks stupid. Right? Now all of a sudden he's 8 and suddenly the floor is like his favorite place to go. And you know what my response is? When you're human, let me know. Right? And the truth is that he's being human, okay? He really is being human, but you know, he doesn't know that distinction yet, so I'm going to work with it, right? The saving grace for us is consistency, and there's science behind this, all right? We hear all the time, we give a lot of lip service, do we need to be consistent? And there's science behind it, but there's scripture behind it, right? That we need to provide discipline, and even though we don't like it, and I'll be honest with you, give me anybody else's kid, I can discipline him. I can sleep train anybody else's kid. You give me mine, and there's that emotional component, right? We sing songs about rocking babies to sleep at night in this country, and I'm sure around the world, right? And yet when we're told, okay, they've developed that poor sleep association, you know, we really need, you know, you need to like teach them how to sleep on their own and don't give in, right? That gets really hard. And it's with everything, right? It gets hard not to give in, okay? And they know it too. They totally know it. And they've got our number, right? So we have to have God's number because God is what's going to help us out, right? So how is it that we're supposed to answer this call, right? He's given us this brain that can't exert the cognitive control that we want, right? Developmentally, it's a long process. He's given us this brain, and it's a part of his design, and we have to love and appreciate it, but we could use a little help, right? And sometimes it's not just prayer. As much as we would like to, there are moments when just praying is not going to teach my kid the right behavior. It's not going to teach him the right response, right? It might calm me down and give me that patience and help me to choose my words appropriately, but it is not going to correct his emotional response or behavior, right? So here's what I didn't tell you, okay? Yeah. So we have our amygdala, which are the seat of our emotional responses. We've got our prefrontal cortex, which is the thinking part, and we know that there's a disconnect, right? That anterior cingulate cortex that coordinates between this lower area of the brain and our higher thinking area of the brain, it's just not developed yet. And it's building connections and it's making connections, but it's not there yet. It's a long process, you know that, right? And here's the thing, is that tied up in here are the hippocampi, right? So there's two hippocampus bodies, and those are involved in memory. Right? So we've got memory and emotion all tied together, and I don't know how well you can see it, but this thing that says limbic system, there's a green outline around all of it, okay? Huh? Yes, there's a green outline around all of it, but here, the OGs is a good thing, right? Because they're all connected and they all work together. This is a part of the brain that I like to say helps us with learning that flies below the PFC's radar, the prefrontal cortex's radar, okay? So this is the system, and oftentimes people say the limbic system is involved in reward. It's involved in pleasure because there's a lot of dopamine release here, okay? But it's actually not the reward circuit. It's the learning circuit, okay? Dopamine is engaged, the limbic system is engaged when we are experiencing pleasurable things and not so pleasurable things. Mad, not mad, right? It's helping us learn through all of it. And this system does not require cognitive control. It doesn't. How many of you guys have heard of reinforcement and punishment? Operant conditioning, things like that. That's in this system, all right? And it's actually a system that's related to addiction, the behavioral components of addiction that you guys will hear about later, all right? So this is one of my areas of expertise, is learning by consequence, okay? So I call it consequential learning. But as in the science, we call it operant conditioning, okay, which is very clinical and very white lab coat and ratty in nature. So it's I'm going to boil it down. I teach an entire class on this, and I could probably teach 4 semesters on this, okay? It's extremely complicated. There are whole degree programs just on how to use these principles to modulate behavior, all right? But boiling it down, things that tend to lead to favorable outcomes are behaviors that we're going to repeat. But the trick is it's not what you think of as a favorable outcome, all right? You ever heard all press is good press? Right? It's the mantra of people like Lindsay Lohan, right? Where it's all good, just get me out there, put my name out there. For our kids, sometimes all attention is good attention, right? And they don't yet have the vocabulary or the skills to recognize that our adverse reaction to them, our aversive reaction to them, is still feeding into the emotion, okay? And we oftentimes, how many of you have ever yelled at your kid? And they continue, right? They keep going. Here's my favorite question, and this question gets thrown out in my house all the time, and it is not me. Why did you do that? What were you thinking? And they say, I, you know what? That's legitimate. They don't know. They can't label it yet. And they may not understand the motivation behind it. So it's our job to get in there and mix it up for them, right? And we can do it under the radar. All right, so this process called reinforcement, there are 2 ways that we can use it to build a behavior. One is giving them something that they like or want to increase a behavior, and the other is taking something away that they don't like or want to increase the behavior. All right, and oftentimes we make the mistake of thinking that, you know, it's we can only do this through, you know, sticker charts and money and prizes, and yeah, those things are fine, and you know, they definitely help us on the outside. They help to build towards that internalization of performing that behavior, because eventually it feels good, it feels better, okay? But attention, praise, time with us, giving them more time to do a preferred activity, hold those things back. Right? Hold those things back that you know they're high probability behaviors, right? Spending time on that tablet, spending time playing a video game, spending time building Legos. Oh, okay, so you want to play with your Legos? Yeah, you're going to have to go clean up the playroom first, all right? And if you do that, you can play with the Legos all you want. You know what? I'll give you an extra 10 minutes before bed to play with Legos. And if we're smart, we build in the things that build other skills for them, right? Taking something away that they don't like, right? Give them fewer chores. Hey, you know what? I really liked the way you handled this today, because that was a tough situation. So, you know, I'm just so proud of you. How about I clean up your toys with you? Or I clean up your toys for you, right? The opportunity to clean up together, it's reinforcing, it's attention, it's time with you, and you're reducing the requirement for them. And they think it's this huge gift, right? It's a huge gift. Now, here's the deal, is that if they're engaged in a behavior we don't want, our job is to figure out what the payoff is, because there is something perpetuating that behavior. It's a reinforcer, okay? And it's not always easy to tell what the reinforcement is, and sometimes that reinforcement is us, right? Which is where this comes in handy. We have to take ourselves out of the mix, right? Because frequently that's what they want. The pleasure of our company, even if it's not that pleasurable at the moment because we're asking them, why did you do that, right? It is still better than the alternative in some cases, okay? So here's the deal though, is that when we have identified a reinforcer and we take it away, we know we have the right reinforcer when their behavior gets worse. Because our system is designed to get as much reinforcement as possible. It's why if we have to punish our kids for something, if we layer on a reinforcer for the incompatible behavior, the behavior that's the better behavior, we get a stronger response, right? And we don't have time to talk about punishment. But if we take away that thing that we think is paying off the behavior, we'll see their behavior go from this to ramping up a bit. And as soon as that happens, we tend to say to ourselves, my gosh, I must have done the wrong thing because it's getting worse, not better. No, don't do that. Because as soon as you give up, their behavior was like this, their behavior's ramping up, you start to second guess yourself and you reinforce them here. Well, guess where their behavior stays? Because all you've taught them is, this doesn't get me my reinforcer, now this gets me my reinforcer. You want me to up my game? I'll up my game, right? So we've got to take that reinforcer away. We have to stick with it, and that's where consistency is key. Right? I can't tell you how many times a day an hour, a minute, I literally sit there, Lord, I need you to strengthen my heart right now because this kid is killing me, right? That consistency piece can be very, very hard, all right? So there's a lot that we can do. I sort of have to boogie a little myself, right? I liked that when you said that, Jen, I got a boogie. There's a lot that we can do to reinforce the behaviors that we want, okay? And talking with our kids, spending time with our kids, telling them how proud we are of them, even if they don't get it right. Recognizing, you know what, I saw you grappling with that. And I know that it doesn't seem like it turned out really well, but I could really see you thinking about it. I could really see you trying, right? And those things are encouraging. Planning ahead, right? Being proactive instead of reactive. Planning ahead. I know in my house that the request to go get ready for school in the morning is going to be met with, right? It's ridiculous. And it happens every morning. Every morning, it is predictable. So providing those cues to transition, huge. Buddy, you got 15 minutes. Buddy, you got 10 minutes. Buddy, you got 5 minutes. Timer goes off, he knows the drill. It's not me telling him he's gotta go upstairs, it's the timer, right? Completely different stimulus that's directing that response, right? It's not my voice, I was the kind person giving him the warnings. The kitchen timer, on the other hand, is the one that he should take his issue up with. Right? And if he throws himself on the floor, hey, you know what? You know what's gonna happen. We've talked about this. You're gonna feel rushed. You're not gonna feel good about it. So let's go up together, all right? Let's go up together. You can turn it into a game too, right? I'm gonna win. I'm gonna beat you. And mommy is never ready before anybody else, right? I'm gonna be ready before you today, right? Boom, right up the stairs. And he'll complain the whole time, but he still does it. Right? And you can't engage the complaint because all that is a delay tactic, right? If we can acknowledge, right, and coach them through instead of dismissing their emotions, there's a difference between ignoring the behavior that we don't want to perpetuate and dismissing emotions. Dismissing emotions altogether is you're being ridiculous. Acknowledging and ignoring until they're ready is, you know what, I can see that you're upset right now and I really want to talk to you about that, but when you have it a little more under control, you think you're ready to talk to me, come talk to me. And it's not, get it together, kid, right? Because that's just going to make it worse, right? We have to be calm and patient. We have to choose our words very carefully, okay? Now, here's the caveats, and I'm sure that we have some people in the room who are dealing with some pretty challenging behaviors and backgrounds with kids, okay? And if emotional regulation is challenging for children who are typically abled and have typical cerebral development, it is going to be harder for kids who have experienced other kinds of developmental pathways, like ADHD, PTSD, suffering from attachment disorder, cognitive impairment, any sort of mental health difficulty, all right? And the trick here is that we can still engage the limbic system, all right? Remember, it's under the radar, all right? The limbic system encompasses all of those areas. That reward pathway, that learning pathway is still there. It might be a little harder to get at because with all of those areas, we have different emotional function, we have different memory function with some populations of kids, and even with adults, okay? If we have a trauma background ourselves, it will take more cognitive effort. It will. Those parts of the brain get changed, and sometimes we're not so sure that they can change back, but we still have a system that can help us. And it doesn't mean that we are cut off from learning new stuff, all right? So just be mindful that could be, that sort of changes the tenor of the conversation, and I really don't want to go there because these kidaronis make me sad, all right? And I've worked with them, and I'm good. I can't go back there. My big old sappy heart can't take it, all right? So, you know, as my students will always say, I talk too much. My plan was to have you guys take that thought about that emotion, the thing that draws a response out of you, and think about it so that we can workshop some of it. And I think Steve said he's going to give us some time for Q&A. So I wanted to do this and do some questions, but I think the best thing that we can do right now is actually get right to this, right? Bless you. So I don't know if anybody wants to share about that thing that they thought of, but if you'd like to share, we can sort of workshop a little bit. Well, let's try to figure out what it is that's paying that behavior off. All right, and let's see how we could withdraw that reinforcement and try to come up with something that would be a little bit more workable, right? Reinforce the appropriate behavior that you want. Anybody willing to throw their hat in the ring? And you know, it could be your emotional response too. I have a volunteer. Classic conflict spiral, right? She escalates, you escalate. She escalates, you escalate, right? So the fact that you have engaged with the terrorist, right? Because they are emotionally terrorizing our homes when they're in these moments, right? And it's a strong word, but I use it because you laugh, right? So it's really the only purpose it serves. You laugh. It's extremely reinforcing for me. You laugh, my students laugh, it's great. I wish my husband were here. He's convinced I'm not funny. So in that moment, instead of your screaming, right? We target their behavior and it doesn't feel good, right? So you think this is screaming? Oh, you just wait till I pull out of my pocket, right? The next level of screaming is even worse. And then they get the rise out of us, we get a bigger rise out of them, and it's an endless cycle, right? And eventually it stops because somebody cries, somebody has to leave the house, you know, they get on the school bus, you turn them loose on the teacher, whatever, you know, the case may be. De-escalation is always the key. We want to pull that reinforcer out because all press is good press, all attention is good attention. We want to take that focus on their behavior. We want to be more patient ourselves. And in that moment, it is going to take a lot of effort. But I see that you're upset, and you know, I can hear that you're upset too, but my heart can't take this, so when you are calm and ready, I will talk this out with you gladly and then walk away. Because as soon as we make that decision to cut it off, remember, their behavior's here, we made the decision to cut it off, they might escalate, we have to stay cut off. Because as soon as we cut them off and they escalate and we go back to it, that's their next starting point, right? Oh, you're not gonna pay attention to me? I'm gonna take all the paints in the closet, I'm gonna throw them on the floor. That's nice. Don't engage, right? Oh, you're gonna clean that up? No, you've just gotten back in the ring, right? After it, when they're calm, hey, how do you think this made me feel? Yeah, not so good. You think maybe we could work together and clean this up? Maybe we could talk about how to avoid it next time? It is going to require a great deal of effort on the part of your prefrontal cortex. Come over the top of it. Yep. So those are the moments when punishment has to come into play. And punishment as a behaviorist concept is something that reduces behavior. And the only real utility in punishment from my perspective is that it will disrupt the behavior. There are some things that happen with punishment. Punishment only allows us short-term control. Long-term use of punishment will actually lead to much worse behaviors. Right? The side effects of it are pretty significant. And so whenever possible, use reinforcement. If you have to use punishment, use it only in that moment. Because punishment in and of itself is very reinforcing to us. It stops whatever's going on. It makes it more likely that we are going to use punishment in the end, and it teaches them nothing about the appropriate behavior. It simply teaches them this has to stop here and now, right? And they'll learn to avoid us. So if I catch it and I punish it, that doesn't mean that they're not gonna do it for Jen, right? So it just means they'll avoid me, and that's, we don't want our kids avoiding us, right? So in that moment, something that disrupts the behavior and gets them, and I mean, I I have done it, not proud of it, but you know, my kid with the homework, oh my gosh, the homework. I don't understand why we have to have tears over homework. You can do all of the work. It's not like you can't do it, right? I could understand it if he couldn't do it. And I got tired of the complaining, and it was a deliberate move on my part. I gave cue after cue after cue, reminded him, I don't know how much patience you expect me to have. I am about the top, and I am about to boil over. Please help me to keep from having to boil over because I don't want to. God does not want me to. I love you, but if you make me boil over, neither one of us is going to be happy, right? He kept pushing. So I took the pencil and I slammed my hand down on the table with the pencil. I hurt my hand, which was not my intention, and I snapped the pencil, which was not my intention either. But in the moment of snapping the pencil, that child, now she's bad. Right? They have to be able to see that there's a distinction between your behavior when they have finally pushed you over the edge. If there's a dangerousness situation, you need to intervene as best possible. And isolation in that moment is really important because it removes the stimuli that are feeding into the behavior. And it removes the potential to reinforce the behavior. They need to be isolated. Without more information, right, it's hard to know because everything is situational. Remember that it's age dependent, temperament dependent, personality, experience, environment. But you do have to intervene. We can't just walk away and let it go and go, oh yeah, I'm really sorry that ended up, you know, with, you know, Timmy stabbing Jimmy in the eye with a pencil, but you know, I can't reinforce the behavior, right? We can't abdicate our responsibility, right? So you do have to intervene. If I had another hour, I could do that one for you. It is, and being proactive about it, right? So having those spaces set up ahead of time. If you are going to parent, you're going to have these issues. You're going to need a space or spaces. Have the kids identify the spaces, right? And say, look, it needs to not be too distracting. No toys, books are fine. Art supplies are fine. In our house, it's you can go up, sit in your chair, read, draw, write. When you're feeling a little better, and feeling like you want to talk, let me know, right? That isolation, the separation from the stimuli that are leading to that interaction is really, really, really critical. Then you remove everybody else. You've got to remove everybody else. And it gets really challenging. It gets really challenging. As a classroom teacher, we had to clear classrooms a lot. it gets really challenging. But that's, again, that proactive piece, right? And acknowledging what's happening. So, you know what? I can see that you're really upset. I'm not sure we're helping. We are going to go to our calming space. You can use this as your calming space. You don't have to go anywhere. You can use this as your calming space. We're gonna go here. And you know what? When you're ready, can you please come and get me, because I want to talk with you about this. I don't want you to feel this way and us not talk about it. No. It is, and especially when you have more than one child and when you can't strap them, you know, down to a chair and duct tape them to the wall, right? Which is really what we want. If you're gonna do that, Gorilla Tape is what works, right? You duct tape the face, you duct tape them to the wall, they're good, they can't move, right? Just kidding. So every situation is different, and that is a much more complicated situation than we can handle like this, right? But you know, the truth is that when we have circumstances like that and when it is repetitive behavior, yes, there are things that are feeding into it and paying off the behavior and reinforcing it, but there could also be things underlying the situation. So, you know, oftentimes when we have kids who cannot disengage from the stimulus, that there's likely something else going on there that might require, you know, a specialist to intervene, right? Especially if it becomes a safety issue, and safety for others and safety for that child. And when we think about their emotional safety, right? So we might look at just the physical piece of it, but if they're engaging in these kinds of behaviors and it's this disruptive within an environment, it is damaging to their emotional safety. And we need to deal with it. And sometimes we need more help. Sometimes, you know, our prayer needs to be not about how can I help, what else can I do, but Lord, where else can I get help with this? Because there are people who do help with it. I mean, Jen is quite gifted at what she does, right? And so, and there are a lot of people who are gifted and prepared, and you have to be careful. You have to shop because there's a lot of crummy therapy out there too, right? So you've got to be very, very careful and shop for good rapport and good theoretical background and good training, right? And any therapist who doesn't give you homework during the week is not, they're not doing what they're supposed to do. Happy to talk a little more after too. Steve, do we have time for? Well, the smarter they get, the more likely it is. And they need us to be able to set boundaries, right? Because they need to be able to trust us. Kids need consistency, they need boundaries, they don't need a friend. You know, they don't need a warden and a warlord, but they also don't need a friend, right? They need a parent. There's a reason that the word is parent, right? And so they need boundaries. And even when we set those boundaries and there's something going beyond that, and when we're being consistent, there may be something else going on that needs to be addressed. How old is she? As a person who deals with dietary stuff all the time, I feel your pain. My child has multiple food allergies, but he's also picky and he's principled. So there are things he won't eat simply out of principle. That's getting easier, but I mean, the period of time where he wouldn't eat chicken because a chicken is a bird and a bird is a living dinosaur and it's not cool to eat dinosaurs was like the worst period of my life. I've never lied so much. I never lied so much in my life, right? You know, it's white beef, right? And Ask my son. He will tell you about white beef, and I did not tell him the truth about it until that child could read at the grocery store, okay? Because we needed to get the nutrition in. There are a lot of ways to sneak nutrition in when they're limited to Nutella and chicken nuggets. That gets a little bit harder. But, you know, all kids go through it. It's natural to be picky, and there's so little that they control in their lives that sometimes diet is where they hit us. See what you did there. Because there were consequences for it. So developmental psychologists have said it's important that kids have choices, right? Well, yeah, but you can't leave it open-ended, right? If you have asked a question that there is not a definite answer to, you have asked the wrong question, right? So what do you want for dinner is not providing choices. It is opening the door to conflict, right? So what would you like for dinner tonight, this or this? And when they say A, super, so I'll make A tonight and we'll have B tomorrow. Done, sealed, nail in the coffin. And it's really hard, but if we stop providing those alternatives, oh, you don't like dinner tonight? Okay, you can have cereal. Oh, you don't like to, hey, I would love to not eat dinner and eat Nutella. It's delicious, right? But when we have those, when we have those pieces, it doesn't take many times for you to go, well, this is what's for dinner and there are no other options. It doesn't take long before, because that's what happened to us, right? Oh, you don't like what's for dinner? You don't eat, right? It doesn't take many trials of that before they start to kick in. The trouble is the consistency, right? It's like trying to keep the dog from begging at the dinner table. If there's one person who's still doing it, the dog's still gonna beg, right? So we can all be consistent, but when grandma comes along and says, oh, you don't like that? Here, because it's my mom, right? So, you know, oh, you don't like that? Here, I'll get you something else. Well, I'm sitting right there. I'm right here, right? You just broke my rules. You cut my legs out from under me, lady, right? So it's challenging. We can talk more if you'd like. I'm going to wrap it up because I'm way past. So
we're going to have time for the other presenters. You got basically 5 minutes to get to the next session so that they have time, and then we can get lunch, and then that way we're not here long. And so sounds like a great one. I went down and listened to Sue Warren in her music therapy class. It was great. You guys missed one down there, and it sounds like I missed one here. So, but my wife was in here, so we'll coordinate later.
Thank you very much.
Take a break. Next session.
Yes, learning by consequence.